Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and April is Ask the Mayor Tryouts Month here on The Brian Lehrer Show. Just like we do Ask the Mayor every Friday with my questions and yours for Mayor Bill de Blasio, we have invited the 8 leading candidates for the June primary to join us this month to do an Ask the Mayor segment with my questions and yours for them. All 8 have accepted. We've done 5 already with 3 left to go. Diane Morales, Andrew Yang, and today, Eric Adams. So now we welcome back to the show candidate and Brooklyn Borough President Eric Adams. His biggest campaign headline in the last few days, he got the coveted endorsement from Bronx Borough President Ruben Diaz Jr. And just let me remind you all of the ground rules that we establish on these. We want these to be policy questions, not gotcha questions or negative attacks. If you get on the air and we think you're a plant from a rival campaign just trying to make our guests look bad, we will give you very short shrift. So it's my questions and yours now for candidate Eric Adams at 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280. Or you can tweet a question. Just use the same hashtag we do on Fridays, hashtag Ask the Mayor. And with all of that as prelude, Borough President Adams, welcome back to WNYC, and thanks for doing an Ask the Mayor tryout.
Hey, Brian, how are you? It's good speaking with you and your audience. I always enjoy talking to you. I was in the cleaners the other day, and a woman came in. I had my mask on. She says, "You're Eric Adams. I hear you on Brian Lehrer's show all the time."
Well, we appreciate your past appearances, and we appreciate this one. And I know you've all done about 1.5 million Zoom forums. So you tell me, is there a most common ask the candidate question that members of the public tend to ask you?
Probably public safety and police reform. It's fascinating that a topic I am knowledgeable about, I have yet to be on one forum where that question did not come up. And the intersectionality of no matter what we're doing, it's always coming back to police reform and public safety.
Well, Politico had a profile of you this weekend. You probably saw it with the headline, "An Armed New York Mayor, Democratic Ex-Cop, Plans to Ride an Anti-Crime Message to City Hall." Do you agree with that framing of your campaign?
Not really. I believe that the prerequisite to prosperity is public safety. And I have been on your show for years, and I don't think there's ever been a time that I did not talk about that. I've started to see how the erosion of public safety is taking place in our city, everything from a real gang problem in the city to the overproliferation of handguns. And so I'm going to talk about our city being safe, because if we're not safe, if our children, 5-year-old children are being shot, grazed with bullets, and 1-year-old children are dying, we will never be the city we want to be. And so that's at the foundation of my campaign. But there's a whole lot in my campaign, as you know, people have witnessed on my website, where I have 100 plus steps forward for New York City.
Well, you know, one of the standard questions I've been asking the candidates in this series is, how would you fight crime and mass incarceration at the same time? And I tend to get answers that emphasize police reform and community investment as the long-term answer to both. And many have been less interested in focusing on short-term means of stopping the shootings today, for example. Do you have more to say on using the police or any other means of capping the current crime wave now? Some listeners might like, if you're more focused on that than other candidates, some might not like it. Would you make a distinction in your eyes between yourself and the other candidate on which of those two you would emphasize right now?
Yes, and it's so important what you just raised, Brian, because dealing with any crisis, you must have a two-pronged attack. Number one, you have to deal with the imminent threat, and number two, you must have a long-term plan to stop the threat from continuing. And many people are comfortable in talking about the long-term idealistic plan, but we have a realistic crisis right now when you're seeing the increase in gun violence in the city, when tourists are shot at Grand Central Station, and when you're seeing someone that can have a handgun so readily accessible to assassinate a lover, as we saw in Park Slope. Long-term plans sound fine, but what are we going to do about the imminent threat? And so there's several things we need to do. Number one, we have to reinstitute the anti-plainclothes unit, turn that unit into an anti-gun unit, have them zero in on gun violence, precision policing, particularly identifying the top drivers of gun violence in the city, and that's dealing with gang behavior. We need to focus on that. Second, we must stop the flow of guns in the city. And this is a role, and just as we did with terrorism, we have not had a major terrorist attack in the city since 2001. We need to have that same level of energy in focusing on the flow of guns in our city, partner with our federal and state agencies to go after large takedowns of handguns that are arriving in the city probably daily. Third, we need to invest in the crisis management team. These are amazing grassroots groups and organizations, allowing them to go after and identify those who are known shooters, the term is used, having them come with real resources and bring people out of the gang behavior. I've been meeting with several gang members over the last few months to talk about how do we dismantle the gang climate in our city and stop the retaliatory shooters. A lot of shooters we're seeing are retaliatory shooters. So there's some things we can do right now.
One follow-up on this, though, then we'll get to calls. There is a chicken and the egg cycle, though, right? Where to stop crime right away, the city has historically deployed more aggressive police measures like broken windows or stop and frisk, which was to get guns off the street, or the street crimes unit, they called it under Giuliani, until it was disbanded after the shooting of Amadou Diallo in the lobby of his own building, or the anti-crime unit, which you just cited, as they called it under de Blasio, because each time more black and brown kids were arrested for not much. And how do you clamp down in crime but get out of that cycle?
Well, clearly I know about all of those errors because I was the leading advocate during those days of fighting against the over-aggressive policing after being assaulted by police officers as a child and going into the police department because civil rights leaders asked me to go in. And I went in with the mission of public safety and justice at the same time. And so if you have the right officers assigned to these units with the right conflict resolution skills, right communication skills, using the data to identify those who are gang members and who are driving the crime. Remember, you don't have a large number of New Yorkers that are participating in this criminal behavior. You have a pocket of people who have made it their decision to wreak havoc on our city. So with precision policing, being proactive in policing, identifying those who are on the pathway of violence and communicating with them before they carry out violence acts, we can actually stop some of the violence that we are seeing. That is where we are falling short. And it's a combination of law enforcement and the various other city agencies that would treat gun violence as a health crisis and not the way we're treating it now. We need to change the ecosystem of public safety in the city.
Craig in Queens, you're on WNYC with mayoral candidate and Brooklyn Borough President Eric Adams. Hi, Craig.
Hey, good morning, Brian. Thank you for taking my call. Mr. Adams, I'll get right to the point. Brian alluded to it a little bit. I'm African-American. I live in Queens for the majority of my life. I'll be seeing 50 years old this year if I make it, God willing. It seems when it comes to crime, it's the face is black men, young black men. I mean, if, you know, I have heard city councilmen advocate people breaking the law because they're minorities. I mean, excuse me, not minorities, recent immigrants, and it's hard for them to get licensing. You know, the churro ladies, when the e-bikes were illegal, there were advocates saying, well, these people should be able to use the e-bikes because they're trying to make a living. Nobody is going to advocate for a person in South Jamaica selling marijuana if that person said, well, they legalized marijuana, but they gave all the licenses out to the big corporations, and I'm just a young guy out here trying to make a couple of dollars. I want to see the law, the breaking of the law, evenly prosecuted. People talk about massage parlors should be, and the sex work should not be criminalized. You live next to a place where men pull up to get massages, or you live off 150th Street in South Road where streetwalkers walk, and your daughter can't walk to the corner store because men blow by and yet whistle at them. And then you say this stuff doesn't have an impact on the community. I mean, we get it from every side. And we're the ones that's always told, follow the law, do the right thing, do this. And we watch people have illegal tenants in their buildings.
So, Craig, what's your question for Eric Adams, or what would you like him to do?
We watch our neighbors have license plates from out of state for 2 years on their car while we play high insurance rate in New York. I mean, when is it going to be that the law is going to be enforced across the board equally with everybody? And to the point about guns, people are bringing guns from out of town.
Hold on, Craig. Hold on, Craig.
Go ahead. Craig, go ahead. He's got a lot on the table.
And
now.
I got you,
Craig. Craig couldn't hear my follow-up.
Right.
I could tell. He wasn't ignoring me. He couldn't hear my follow-up asking him to get to his question. But our president is putting a lot of real stuff on the table.
And he's right. And I'm so happy he called with that question, because there's a energy out there that everyday New Yorkers don't want a community that has a high quality of life. We have created this environment that there's a trade-off. Either we have to allow over-aggressive policing, or we have to go with a real disruption in our quality of life, particularly in Black, Brown, and immigrant communities. And that is just not true. When I move through the city and I talk to people like Craig, you know, my family house is in South Jamaica, Queens. They don't want to go back to the days when Fat Cat Nichols and top drug lords were raining violence in their community. And so the role we must play is to make sure our agencies, as some of the issues that he mentioned, and our law enforcement is not heavy-handed, but to ensure that we have the quality of life that we're expecting in our city. And that is doable. And that's what you heard with Craig. You heard the frustration of a city that appears to be out of control on right. dealing with some of the basic quality of life issues.
Let's go to Don in Manhattan, who's going to change the subject entirely, I think. Don, you're on WNYC with Eric Adams.
Oh, thanks, Brian. Yeah, Mr. Adams, my issue here is, my question for you and my issue is, it's directed to you and also all the other candidates. Brian, if you could maybe find this out from these people. Is I'm a working musician, a gigging musician, really original gig economy. I've been doing this in New York for 40 years. I live in the East Village. I own a car. I park on the street, all right? I can't afford $500 a month to park a car. What we have in the city now is a mayor who has essentially given eminent domain of the city streets to the restaurant industry, right, to seize these parking spaces, to take these parking spaces. He used the pandemic to do this, and everybody's, you know, okay with him doing that during the pandemic. But he did this with no input from any communities about the effects of these. They're called terraces. They're really farm sheds, what they basically are. They're called loafing sheds. We had them on the farm when I was a kid where you put pigs in them. But it's like these, you know, these neighborhoods now, the West Village, the East Village, some of these streets look like the slums of some Brazilian city. They look like a shanty town. I mean, we've come a long way from like an Edward Hopper painting in New York. We look more like a Steinbeck Oakey camp. What I want to know, and what's happening for me as a musician who needs a car to get to gigs and come back and find parking, it's basically kind of putting me out of business.
Don, I'm going to get you an answer to your question. Are open streets really outdoor dining that moves off the sidewalk into the street, taking up parking spots, going too far for permanent status, in your opinion, Borough President?
I'm a strong supporter of open streets. I'm a strong supporter of our restaurant industries having an opportunity to use some of the spaces on our streets to ensure that we deal with the COVID crisis. And I'm a strong supporter of seeing how we expand that, even the sidewalk use in cafes on the sidewalk. Our restaurant industry really is the bellwether for our entire city. I was a dishwasher as a child, and I know when you look at a restaurant, you may see just fancy dining, but in fact, it's part of our ecosystem, of our financial ecosystem. And so we can find a way to do it where we can coexist, but I strongly support open streets. I strongly support having the outdoor dining. This allowed us to keep that industry from going under and really hurting our entire city.
So not the callers, not the answer the caller was hoping to hear, but a clear position on that issue. Bruce in Harlem, you're on WNYC. Hi, Bruce.
Hi, this is Theo Bruschino Tavares in Harlem, and I want to know how the mayor candidate will be dealing with the incompetent people leading NYCHA, DHS, and HPD, which allow nonprofit companies such as you have or Rice Board to financially rape current and future low-income homeowners using the low-income tax credit. Scam. This is not the first time we talked about it. So what's your plan, Eric? You were board president, and Rice Board took over a whole building complex in your district in Brooklyn. Nothing has been done.
Sounds like you have a history with this caller, but why don't you tell everybody else what the issue is as you see it?
I really didn't understand exactly what his issue was, and I don't have a history with the caller. But what I will tell you this is that the bugles you hear for NYCHA, that's not the cavalry, that's TAPS. NYCHA is dying, and we keep having the same response that we will look for the federal government to come in and bail us out. Yes, we need the federal government, but there are some things we can do now. I support the regional planning authority's call to sell the air rights, not the land, but the air rights over NYCHA. They are projected anywhere from $4 to $8 billion. We can use that for emergency repairs to get NYCHA up and operating while we're fighting for the federal government to come in. But we need to do something else. I think it's unfair that we are asking NYCHA residents to navigate these complex proposals that are coming down. We need to allow the NYCHA board members to, number one, have an attorney that will give them advice on some of these real important, everything from RAD to infield building to next gen, so that they can sit down and come up with real understandings and make real decisions on their livelihoods. And we also must move NYCHA deeper into the 21st century. I call for NYCHA stats. We could put QR codes on every building to identify what repairs need to be on the building, a greater level of transparency where we can really hold NYCHA management accountable in real time. We must move the city to a real-time governing model, and NYCHA is the place where we need to do it, and then give on-the-ground support. The numbers of NYCHA residents and young people who are not needing proficiency in education, who are not employed, who are dealing with chronic illnesses, if we don't get into NYCHA and have a holistic approach of turning around NYCHA, we're going to be at the table again saying the same thing. So it's not about just the builders have lost faith. The entire NYCHA population has lost faith.
With the Oscars last night, I could say our next caller is George from Nomadland, but really he's George from Nomad, which some of you know is short for Madison Square North, that neighborhood of Manhattan, and he has a zoning question. George, you're on WNYC with Eric Adams.
Good morning, Borough President Adams. You said that you would upzone Manhattan. Good, thank you. Nice to hear you again. You said you would upzone Manhattan from 14th to 42nd Street, among other areas of the city. And presumably this is to create affordable housing, but upzonings often result in creating market rate housing, eliminating affordable units, and leaving vacant lots for years, in Nomad in particular, where historic buildings once stood. Can you discuss your support of citywide upzoning and square that with you being one of the few candidates to accept funding from real estate developers?
Well, it sounds as though, you know, one of my opponents probably put this question is, let's be clear, over 75% of my contributions have come from low-dollar donors. I'm extremely proud of how I have been able to reach across the city. 51% of our income tax dollars come from real estate. When you look at the opponents who have stated they're not taking real estate dollars, you're finding just the opposite. People are saying they're not taking any money from landlords, yet what happened to those small property landlords, 1 to 4 family owners? We should demonize them? No. What we should do is go after bad acting landlords and ensure that we, number one, use our criminal justice system when they commit crimes such as illegal evictions, destroying property, arson, and we should prosecute them to the fullest extent of the law. But
why not say no to donations from big corporate landlords who many of our listeners would think have too much influence in politics?
Well, I don't believe that, Brian. I think that if we're saying that because someone gives you a contribution that you are going to make decisions, then that's an indictment on the entire system.
Why else would a big real estate company make a donation?
Well, when I speak to real estate companies, they talk about public safety. They talk about our property values have gone up in the city because we became a safe city during the days of when we turned around crime. The prerequisite to prosperity is public safety. And when landlords and others, big and small, hear me talk about how this city is going to be a safe city for all of our residents, they're not supporting me because of my real estate policies. I denied projects in my borough that I voted against that were big real estate projects. And so to think that a landlord is not concerned about education, is not concerned about safety, is not concerned about health care, that is just not true. They are tied to the success of this city, and I advocate on the success of the entire city.
All right. We've got a minute left. You ready for a lightning round to conclude? Yes or no answers, or very short answers?
I hate yes or no answers.
Do your best. Did you think Amazon headquarters in Queens would have been more good or more bad for the city?
I believe it would have been good if we would have eked out and listened to the Queensbridge residents and local residents to determine how to get good community benefits agreements, including around education.
Should gifted and talented programs exist at all in the public schools?
I say yes, but we need to expand the definition of that. I will open up 5 more schools, 1 in each borough, and use a cross sections of how we determine gifts, even with children with special needs. They have gifts as well, and we're only focusing on exams. Let's use a different model.
Have you ever ridden a city bike?
All the time.
Do you own a car?
No, I do not.
If you're raising children or did raise children, I don't know your family status, do they or did they attend public school the whole time?
I had one son, felt like 5 sons, but I had one son, and Jordan attended public school throughout his entire career.
Do you have a favorite spectator sport?
Yes, biking is one. That is one of the favorite pastimes.
Wow.
And I enjoy basketball as well.
Knicks or Nets?
Nets. You trying to get me in trouble?
The borough president of Brooklyn has to give that answer. If you donate as a member... It was great to see KD back last night, by the way. If you donate as a member to any arts organization, can you name one?
Arts East New York. I like going after my small organizations. They are often ignored.
Name one thing that you do for fun in non-pandemic times that has nothing to do with politics.
I enjoy the waterfront. The Brooklyn Greenway, something that I advocated and supported. I enjoy being there. I enjoy riding my bike to all of our waterfront locations in the city.
And finally, with ranked choice voting, is there anyone you would like your supporters to list second?
There are a number of candidates that I am extremely impressed with their beliefs. We haven't zeroed in on exactly which one, but I can see myself ranking one of the candidates as second.
So you might come to an answer, a name on that before a primary?
Yes.
Borough President and mayoral hopeful Eric Adams, we always appreciate it. Thank you so much for doing an Ask the Mayor tryout today.
Thank you very much. Take care. Good speaking with you again and your audience.